4 is the apprentice who does not surpass his master, Leonardo da Vinci. Welcome to Flourish. I'm Diane Planetin, and you're in the right place if you're ready to create an inspired life. And we do so by working on our own personal development, so we can be strong role models for those we love and mentor, and strong for our own personal well-being. Put your own oxygen mask on first, right? Today, we continue our journey in the best-selling book by Robert Greene called Mastery, and I'm sorry, mine's in rough shape. I've read it a number of times, and I'm just so thrilled to share it with you, because I know that making time to read such important books is a bit of a luxury. So here we go. The next chapter is all about how important it is that you have a mentor. He begins this chapter by saying, absorb the master's power, the mentor dynamic. Make sure you stay till the very end and hit that subscribe button, because this book is absolutely awesome. But stay till the very end, because he gives a really good tip about if you cannot find a mentor, you don't have the resources, you don't have the connections. Gives you some other ideas. So here we go. Life is short, and your time for learning and creativity is limited. Without any guidance, you can waste valuable years trying to gain knowledge and practice from various sources. Instead, you must follow the example set by masters throughout the ages and find the proper mentor. The mentor-protege relationship is the most efficient and productive form of learning. The right mentors know where to focus your attention and how to challenge you. Their knowledge and experience becomes yours. They provide immediate and realistic feedback on your work so you can improve more rapidly. Through an intense person-to-person interaction, you absorb a way of thinking that contains great power and can be adapted to your individual spirit. Choose the mentor who best fits your needs and connects to your life task. Once you have internalized their knowledge, you must move on and never remain in their shadow. Your goal is always to surpass your mentors in mastery and brilliance. So how do you do that? Well, he gives some great examples in the book, top 4 at the very end of the chapter, and through his storytelling, he gives a nice example about Michael Faraday, who, when he was apprenticing in a bookbinding shop, came across a 41 book called Improvement of the Mind, a self-help guide written by Reverend Isaac Watts. And for Watts, learning had to be an active process. He recommended not just reading about scientific discoveries, but actually recreating the experiments that led to them. The importance of having teachers and not just learning from books. Taking detailed notes from lectures, then reworking the notes themselves. All of this imprinting the knowledge deeper in the brain. And Faraday took it even further. And he says, but science does not consist of the accumulation of information. It is a way of thinking, of approaching problems. The scientific spirit is creative. Faraday knew he needed to move to the inside where he could gain practical hands-on experience, become part of the community, and learn how to think like a scientist. And thinking skills is one of those that you can work your way up with. If you've been watching the show for a while, you know that my son, my bride and joy, one of the classes he took in high school, and this was optional, was literally called thinking skills. He's the only one in his class that took it. Kind of important, guys, right? And he goes on to say that Faraday, through his vigilance and eventually finding his mentor, because he remained ready and open to opportunities, he went on to become one of history's greatest practitioners of experimental science, far outshining the fame of his one-time mentor. Ooh, don't outshine the master, right? First law of power. Well, sometimes you have to move on when you're ready, because like Leonardo said, you're not doing yourself any favor if you hold yourself back. But why do we hold ourselves back? He says, we must admit there are people out there who know our field much more deeply than we do. Their superiority is not a function of natural talent or privilege, but rather of time
and experience. Understand, all that should concern you in the early stages of your career is acquiring practical knowledge in the most efficient manner possible. For this purpose, during the apprentice phase, you will need mentors whose authority you recognize, to whom you submit. Your admission of need does not say anything essential about you, but only about your temporary condition of weakness, which your mentor will help you overcome. They'll help you overcome this. The reason you require a mentor is simple. Life is short. You have only so much time and so much energy to expend. And I don't think he means that's a shortcut for you either, because he says mentors do not give you a shortcut, but they streamline the process. Their knowledge and experience becomes yours. They can direct you away from unnecessary side paths or errors. They observe you at work and provide real-time feedback, making your practice more time efficient. Their advice is tailored to your circumstances and your needs. Working closely with them, you absorb the essence of their creative spirit, which you can now adapt in your own way. What took you 10 years on your own could have been done in 5 with proper direction. And there's more than just saving time here. When we learn something in a concentrated manner, it has added value. We experience fewer distractions. What we learn is internalized more deeply because the intensity of our focus and practice, our own ideas and development flourish more naturally in this shortened time frame. Having an efficient apprenticeship, we can make the most of our youthful energy and our creative potential. So what makes this mentor-protege dynamic so intense and so productive is the emotional quality of the relationship. By nature, mentors feel emotionally invested in your education. This can be for several reasons. Perhaps they like you, or see in you a younger version of themselves and can relive their own youth through you. Perhaps they recognize in you a special talent that will give them pleasure to cultivate. Perhaps you have something important to offer them. And he does speak here at length about your youth, because between 20 to 50, he says 20 to 40, but I'm going to stretch that to 50, the energy you have, the amount of times that you can bounce back after pulling an all-nighter or just focusing and really, really powering down on what you're doing. And that's when you become in the zone and in the flow, right? But you're never too old to learn. You're never too old to retool and regroup. And actually, there was an article in Forbes just the other day that said people in their 60s plus are re-entering the workforce. And I'm thrilled about that because they have the expertise. But let's continue. So what is this teacher-student dynamic? What makes it work so well? Why should you do it? Well, when you admire people, you become more susceptible to absorbing and imitating everything they do. You pay deeper attention. Your mirror neurons are more engaged, allowing for learning that involves more than superficial transmission of knowledge, but also includes a style and a way of thinking that is often powerful. Think of it this way. The process of learning resembles the medieval practice of alchemy. In alchemy, the goal was to find a way to transform base metals or stones into gold. To effect this, alchemists searched for what was known as the philosopher's stone, a substance that would make dead stones or metals come alive and organically change their chemical compound composition into gold. The mentor is like the philosopher's stone. Through direct interaction with someone of experience, you're able to quickly and efficiently heat up and animate this knowledge, turning it into something like gold. The mentor is like the philosopher's stone. And he circles back here to Faraday and how he spent 8 years with his mentor, learning the ins and outs of science and chemistry, and he became the inventor of electromagnetism as a result. And it just dawned on him one day. Isn't that exciting? I think that's super exciting. He says, if Faraday had stayed on the path of self-apprenticeship out of fear or insecurity, he would have remained a bookbinder, miserable and unfulfilled. Through the alchemy of intense mentorship, he transformed himself into one of the most creative scientists in history. Did you hear that? If he had stayed on the path of self-apprenticeship out of fear, there's nothing to fear but fear itself. Everything you want is on the other side of fear. I did a whole episode just about fear. I'm going to link that in the show notes. It's absolutely fascinating. So how do you do this? How do you find the mentor that's right for you, that's going to help you get on the other side of fear? Well, he says, to initially entice the right master to serve as your mentor, you want to mix in a strong element of self-interest. You have something tangible and practical to offer them. In addition to your use and energy, if you work on yourself first, developing a solid work ethic and organizational skills, eventually the right teacher will appear in your life. And they'll appear in your life because they will recognize the ability to transfer their experience and knowledge to someone younger often provides them with great pleasure, akin to parenting. I like that. They can train you to think on a higher level and to make connections between different forms of knowledge. It gives a great example here about how Aristotle was a mentor to 13-year-old Alexander the Great, because the philosopher had learned and mastered so many different fields. He could thus impart to Alexander an overall love of learning and teach him how to think and reason in any kind of situation, the greatest skill of all. What was that? Yeah, how to think and reason in any kind of situation. You will want as much personal interaction with the mentor as possible. A virtual relationship is never enough. Stay tuned. But he says there are cues and subtle aspects you can only pick up through a person-to-person interaction, such as a way of doing things that has evolved through much experience. And that's going back to the pattern of motion and mirror neurons and thought process. But this process of absorption is also relevant to non-manual skills. It was only through constant exposure, in his example with Faraday, to his master Davy, that Faraday understood the power of finding the crucial experiment to demonstrate an idea, something he would adapt later on with great success. Yeah, being around presence of greatness. Who do you surround yourself with? He says, although one mentor at a time is best, it's not always possible to find the perfect one. If your circumstances limit your contacts, books can serve as temporary mentors, as the improvement of mind did for Faraday. In such a case, you will want to convert such books and writers into living mentors as much as possible. You personalize their voice, interact with the material, taking notes or writing in the margins. Whoops, that's me. You analyze what they write and try to make it come alive. The spirit, and not just the letter of their work. He says, through much research and some imagination on your part, you turn them into a living presence. You ask yourself, what would they do in this situation? And I would add to that, what would they say in this situation? How would they act in this situation? It's a powerful, powerful way. He says, in any event, you will probably have several mentors in your life, like stepping stones along the way to mastery. At each phase of life, you must find the appropriate teachers, getting what you want out of them, moving on, and feeling no shame for this. It is a path your own mentor probably took, and it is the way of the world. Okay, now we're getting to the real meat of this. Strategies for deepening the mentor dynamic. Oh, and he has this great quote here to start, but from Nietzsche. One repays a teacher badly if one remains only a pupil. I like that. So he's going to do four strategies that are designed to help you exploit the relationship to the fullest and transform the knowledge you gain into creative energy. So number one, choose the mentor according to your needs and inclinations. The choice of the right mentor is more important than you might imagine. So much of your future that's influenced upon you can be deeper than you are consciously aware of, the wrong choice can have a net negative effect. In selecting a mentor, you will want to keep in mind your inclinations and life's task, the future position you envision for yourself. The mentor you choose should be strategically aligned with this. And that was the first episode about your life's task. And he says, remember, the mentor dynamic replays something of the parental or father figure dynamic. It's a cliche that you do not get to choose the family you were born into, but you are happily free to choose your mentors. In this case, the right choice can perhaps provide you with your what your parents didn't give you. Support, confidence, direction, space to discover things on your own. Look for mentors who can do that and beware of falling into the opposite trap. Opting for a mentor who resembles one of your parents, including all of his negative traits, you will merely repeat what hampered you in the first place. Number two, gaze deep into the mentor's mirror. To reach mastery, it requires some toughness and a constant connection to reality. As an apprentice, it can be hard for us to challenge ourselves on our own in proper ways and get a clear sense of our own weakness. Masters are those who by nature have suffered to get where they are. They've experienced endless criticisms of their work, doubts about their progress, setbacks along the way. They know deep in their bones what is required to get to the creative phase and beyond. Accustom yourself to criticism. That's a tough thing. Confidence is important, but it is not based on a realistic appraisal of who you are. It is mere grandiosity and smugness. Through the realistic feedback of your mentor, you will eventually develop a confidence that is much more substantial and worth possessing. Number three, transfigure their ideas. As apprentices, we all share in this dilemma. To learn from mentors, we must be open and completely receptive to their ideas. We must fall under their spell. But if we take this too far, we become so marked by their influence that we have no internal space to incubate and develop our own voice. And we spend our lives tied to ideas that are not our own. Even as we listen and incorporate the ideas of our mentors, we much slowly cultivate some distance from them. We begin by gently adapting their ideas for our circumstances, altering them to fit our style and inclinations. As we progress, we can become bolder, even focusing on faults or weaknesses in some of their ideas. We slowly mold their knowledge into our own shape. As we grow in confidence and contemplate our independence, we can even grow competitive with the mentor we once worshipped. And back to Leonardo da Vinci, where I opened with, where is the apprentice who does not surpass his master? What would Leonardo do, right? And number four, create a back and forth dynamic. Why is that important? Well, once a back and forth dynamic is sparked, the relationship has almost limitless potential for learning and absorbing power. In theory, there should be no limit to what we can learn from mentors who have wide experience. But in practice, this is rarely the case. The reasons are several. At some point in the relationship, it can become flat. It is difficult for us to maintain the same level of attention that we had in the beginning. We might come to resent their authority a little, especially as we gain in skill and difference between us becomes somewhat less. Also, they come from a different generation with a different worldview. At a certain point, some of their cherished principles might seem a bit out of touch or irrelevant, and we unconsciously tune them out. The only solution is to evolve a more interactive dynamic with the mentor. If they can adapt to some of your ideas, the relationship becomes more animated, feeling a growing openness on your part to your input. You are less resentful. You are revealing to them your own experiences and ideas, perhaps loosening them up so their principles don't harden into dogma. Such a style of interaction is more in tune with our democratic times, and we can serve as something as an ideal. But it should not go along with a rebellious attitude or a lessening in respect. Bring to the relationship the utmost in admiration and your total attention. You are completely open to their instruction. Gaining their respect for how teachable you are, they will fall a little bit under your spell. I like that. With your intense focus, you improve in skill levels, giving you the power to introduce more of yourself and your needs. This must begin with you as you set the tone with your hunger to learn. Once a back and forth dynamic is sparked, the relationship has almost limitless potential for learning and absorbing power. But what if you can't find a mentor? Well, he says, it's never wise to purposely do without the benefits of having a mentor in your life. You will waste valuable time in finding and shaping what you need to know. But sometimes you have no choice. There is simply no one around you who can fill this role, and you are left to your own devices. In such a case, you must make a virtue of necessity. That was the path taken by perhaps the greatest historical figure to ever attain mastery alone, Thomas Alva Edison. He says, if you are forced onto this path, you must follow Edison's example by developing extreme self-reliance. Under these circumstances, you become your own teacher and mentor. You push yourself to learn from every possible source. You read more books than those who have a formal education, developing this into a lifelong habit. As much as possible, you try to apply your knowledge in some form of experiment or practice. You find for yourself second-degree mentors in the form of public figures who can serve as role models. Reading and reflecting on their experiences, you can gain some guidance. You try to make their ideas come to life, internalizing their voice. As someone self-taught, you will maintain a pristine vision, completely distilled through your own experiences, giving you a distinctive power and path to mastery. So no excuses. You can do it, right? And he ends with a quote here. To learn by example is to submit to authority. You follow your master because you trust his manner of doing things, even when you cannot analyze an account in detail for its effectiveness. By watching the master and emulating his efforts, the apprentice unconsciously picks up the rules of the art, including those which are not explicitly known to the master himself. Michael Polanyi. And a prime example of this is now that you know that you have the power within you. You get to parent yourself. You get to take control of yourself. And you get to be a mentor to others, a role model, a positive one. And in doing so, you will live a more inspired life. Well, if you like the show, share it with somebody you know, and hey, hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up. You do not want to miss the next chapter. I'll see you then.